Hey, welcome to my podcast. My name is Dr. Brendan McCarthy. I am the Chief Medical Officer of Protea Medical Center in Chandler, Arizona. Thank you so much for stopping in and tuning into the podcast today. If you take a moment, please, and just hit the subscribe button down below and we'll get started. One of the things I want to discuss today has been in the same vein, I guess is a good way of putting it, that we've been discussing a lot on the podcast lately. And I promise you, my whole podcast won't be only about this, but it's birth control and estrogen. I have so many other things I want to discuss. There's so much other material out there I think that is so important to share. And I want you to know that I'm not a one-trick pony. There's a lot of other things that need to be shared. And so I will continue with this, though, until I feel like we've really covered it well enough. And then we're going to start migrating to other subjects. So with that said, today I wanted to talk a little bit more about birth control. And specifically with birth control, what are good options for women? In our last episode, I talked about when a woman takes oral contraceptives, she has certain side effects that occur. And that if she has no choice but has to stay on oral contraceptives, we give her certain things to mitigate those risks. So if their sex hormone binding globulin is really elevated, we'll use DHEA and we will drive down that sex hormone binding globulin number. And we will see if that can improve their levels of free testosterone. We talked about if estrogen levels become hyper elevated, we end up going in, we recommend different things to lower estrogen. Diindolymethane or DIM as a supplement can be helpful. Fiber, there's a lot of dietary things that work well, vitamin B6. And where I think the practice of medicine is a service to you is that we run the lab a month later to verify that estrogen went down and worked. So I don't recommend supplements lightly ever. I always recommend them and I prove that they worked, or I don't recommend them at all. I just don't. What if you have other options? Let me go back to that. What are the other options for these women? What else is available to them? Well, there's an IUD. Now the IUD, there's two different kinds. There's going to be the copper IUD, which is non-hormonal, and then there's going to be the hormonal one with the synthetic progesterone added to it. When you do a copper IUD, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a larger device and insertion is going to be difficult. Now, if you have a 17-year-old, so let me step back for a moment. Say a 17-year-old presents to my clinic, 18-year-old presents to my clinic, has never had children. What do I recommend to them? What would I do? What would I recommend to my daughter even? What would be the thing that's on the table for them? Most doctors hearing me say this, their hair will catch on fire. So if you're a doctor watching this and you're the type that catches fire, have a fire extinguisher. Pause the video, go get a hose or something, and restart. I would say even in those cases, a woman who's never had children, I recommend a copper IUD. That's my top thing first. The copper IUD, again, large device, and it needs to pass through something called the os, or the opening of the cervix, to get into the uterus. That is not an easy thing to do. And I know I've done many of them in my career. The thing about doing a copper IUD in a woman that's never had a child is that that os has never opened up to let a baby pass through. So the os is still really relatively small. You can use a 5-year IUD. They're available. Paragard makes a 5-year IUD. It's a little bit smaller than the 10-year one. And you can do, there's a procedure how you do an IUD. Now, this sounds barbaric, and it is. Most times when a woman presents herself to clinic to have an IUD inserted, they just go and they just push it in there. And that is a catastrophic thing to do to a woman's body, in my opinion. Catastrophic is a dramatic word, but I do feel strongly about this. That is a very personal part of your body. And there's no reason for that to be pushed through. When we do IUD insertions clinically in our practice, historically, we don't do it anymore. We just refer out. It's a little bit easier for us to refer out. But when we do it historically in our practice, there's several steps we take. We give them the night before, make sure they have a cervical ripening agent like misoprostol that softens the cervix. That makes it more soft so you can pass through the os with the IUD. So the morning of the insertion, we recommend them, we prescribe them Valium, to take. Now, Valium is an anti-anxiety agent. Yeah, so it helps calm them down a little bit, but it's also that lack of anxiety, the reduction of anxiety helps open that area up and soften up a little bit more, creates a little less tension in that area. We also do what's called a cervical block, where we inject into the cervix an anesthetic to numb the area as well. But before all that, what's also important is I have a good long conversation with her. I address all of her fears. I talk about what I'm going to be looking for, what the goal will be in that moment. I walk her through the procedure. I make sure she has buy-in and she understands. I make sure she feels safe. That's the most important thing, to set the stage with her. And then you do all those steps. It makes the IUD insertion much easier. Now, if I'm going in, I'm going to do these procedures. Sometimes the misoprostol, the cervical ripening agent, didn't soften the os as well as I wanted it to. I'll reschedule it. I will not force an IUD into a woman's body. I know many of you out there have had a very bad experience having an IUD inserted. I know. I've sat in the room with you. I know. And I know as a man, I will never experience that. I've sat in that room and I hear it, and I hear you, and I empathize with you, and I know never to do that. It's not all right. And I advocate for it never to be done. So an IUD should never be placed in your body forcefully. You should be prepared for it. You should be, you know, treated for it medically, properly, with every step necessary to prepare your body for it. And then when it's inserted, ultrasound, make sure it's positioned perfectly. And there you have it for 5 years to 10 years, depends on the size you use. So with that younger woman, would I use an IUD? Yes. Yes, I would. And I would use that procedure and I would go for it. Now, what about the IUDs that are synthetic with progesterone? They're much smaller, much easier to insert, a lot less complications. It's not that they're awful. They're not, they're evil. I still have a thing for synthetic progesterone. I just do. You know, there's enough research showing the association with synthetic progesterone and breast cancer. There's enough. And so if you're going to do it, okay, but just know that. And they don't always tell it to you, or they play it down like, oh, it's not that big of a risk. Oh, if you smoke, it's way worse. Yes, if you smoke, it's way worse. But still, if you don't smoke, there's still that risk. And so you want your doctor to really honestly care about you and talk about the risk. You want that doctor, see, okay, with me, when that woman's in the room with me and she's talking about using a progesterone, synthetic progesterone IUD, in my head, I'm thinking to myself, in 25 years, where will I be with her in that moment? How will I feel in that moment if something did come across and I inserted that IUD? Because my patients stay with me that long. Most doctors you see now only see you that one time. They maybe are in your life for a year or two and they're gone. I don't think that way because I don't have patients like that. My patients are with me. I keep them. So when I do an IUD that has synthetic progesterone, I have that caring conversation with them, knowing that I'm going to be walking by their side the rest of their lives as their doctor. And so what if they move that? What if they move to another state or another country, whatever? That doesn't mean I don't care. I mean, she's still my patient. She gave me her trust. How dare I do anything less than my best? And my best means sitting down with her and going over those risks and really thinking it through with her and caring about her and discussing pros and cons and how to mitigate risks the best we can. So what happens if she chooses a synthetic progesterone IUD? Is that so bad? Not really. Not too bad. You know, there's the risk to breast cancer, as I mentioned. It inserts a little bit easier. It does not have the same negative impact that oral contraceptives do, because it does not raise your sex hormone binding globulin. So it does not render your testosterone inert. It does not cause long-term reductions in free testosterone that long-term lead to issues with libido, confidence, assertiveness, risk-taking. It doesn't mess with that. So using a synthetic progesterone-based IUD, not so bad. Not so bad. It's just the breast cancer component we worry about in the back of our heads. But another thing that does happen with this is, think about it. When I give a woman synthetic progesterone, IUD, it's going to suppress her natural progesterone production. Not completely, not all of it, but enough. So in those cases of those women, I will lab their progesterone and make sure it's not being suppressed. I'll make sure they have progesterone, because if it does suppress progesterone and say they don't have very much progesterone cyclically, they're going to have more PMS symptoms, anxiety, depression, insomnia. I mean, think about how many women you've heard stories when they had the IUD inserted, they felt they went crazy. What happened was is their body suppressed their body's production of progesterone. They no longer had bioavailable progesterone, natural progesterone in their body. So now that lack of bioavailable progesterone doesn't go to the brain where progesterone, where it shines, it goes into the brain. Progesterone crosses that blood-brain barrier, turns to allopregnanolone, and allopregnanolone as a neurosteroid that comes from progesterone in the brain. It's the most beautiful anti-anxiety agent we could ever have. It's wonderful. It promotes sleep. It promotes serotonin pathways. It's great. Neuroplasticity. Progesterone is beautiful. But if you don't have it because the IUD has been suppressing it, I make sure you if you need it, I give it to you. And I prescribe that all during the time you're on that synthetic progesterone contraceptive. What about the mini pill? That's popular. The mini pill is not as effective as the triphasic, biphasic, monophasic. It's not as effective as the regular pill that you would think of. The mini pill is just a synthetic progesterone only all month long. Now, the mini pill does not have the same side effects as a regular oral contraceptives would. The mini pill or progesterone only pill, the side effects of that are purely related to synthetic progesterone in the body once again. So synthetic progesterone in the body, when you're taking the mini pill, has that higher risk for breast pathology and the higher risk for neurological stuff going on in the background. So you want to monitor those things and make sure the patient has buy-in and she decides she wants to do that. Again, I think it's 8% is the average effectiveness of the mini pill. So it's not the most effective, but if you're going to use it, those are the two risks. Another thing synthetic progesterone pill does not do is it does not fool around with sex hormone binding globulin in the way it doesn't hyper increase it, but it does push testosterone off of it. So when you take a synthetic progesterone only pill, the mini pill, you will have a bump up in your bioavailable testosterone. So it may cause you to have too much testosterone. We have to watch out for that and be careful of it as a physician. I got to run those free testosterone levels. I got to make sure it's not going too high. It's because this pill is now fooling around with sex hormone binding globulin, but it's the opposite of the regular birth control. What it's doing is making you have too much testosterone in circulation. So taking the progesterone only pill may cause you to have excess testosterone symptoms like oily skin, body hair, clitoral megaly, mood disorders, things like that, where it's too much testosterone. So we monitor that as well. Now, there's patches that are available on the market in some countries don't. They put a patch on and that's their contraceptives. Same thing as synthetic progesterone when it's done as an IUD or as a pill. It's going to cause you to have a higher risk factor for breast pathology. The oral progesterone-only pill is going to make you have more free testosterone, you know, unbound. The topical has that risk as well. More so than the IUD does. The IUD does not have the same level of risk, a little bit of risk. That's why I didn't mention earlier. The patch, though, also has synthetic estrogen on there. And synthetic estrogen, when put on topically, does not have the same conversion rate to estrone. So it's not as bad, the topical pill patch. It's just putting on the patch. It's just synthetic progesterone with your mood. Synthetic progesterone possibly with too much testosterone. Synthetic progesterone possibly with higher risk factors for breast cancer. Just keep those in mind. You know, there's going to be the barrier methods, which is going to be the condom. And I'm going to say this. This is something I'm not even going to back down on. I'm just going to say this. It is not an effective form of birth control for women because women do not have control over contraceptives when it's a condom. Don't rely on it. If you're in a committed marriage and, you know, you both are together and you trust your husband, fine. It's just, I'm not an advocate for condoms. I'm just not. I know they're beneficial for preventing STDs. So I like it for that, yes. But for when it comes to contraceptives, I just don't trust them enough. I don't trust something that's not in your hands. And I know that sounds like I'm a gender traitor. I'm not. I'm just being honest with you. This is just what I see clinically and my personal opinion on this. I just don't trust it. Any other barrier methods with women? They're out there. You know, there's female condoms that are available. There's diaphragms that are available. There's all these things. And they're fine. They're out there. I'm not going to get too in-depth with that. There's enough out there. You can research it yourself. I just want to talk about the endocrine component. If you're going to do a barrier method, you know, they're not as effective, but they still work well enough. As long as you have control over it, I think that's fine. There are going to be those who are huge advocates for the rhythm method and the withdrawal method. And those have risks when they're not done correctly. If you do the withdrawal method incorrectly, that really drops off the effectiveness. If you do it well, you know, you still have a risk. You know, it's not without flaws. And the rhythm method, I was raised Catholic and we learned that, you know, it's part of our faith, but it's out there for everybody. You know, the rhythm method, it's tricky, but I like when patients do the rhythm method because it teaches the woman, it trains the mind to start being very aware of when she ovulates and how her cycles move. And it helps her get very connected with her cycle. So I think in a lot of ways, it's a very helpful technique. It's not always the most effective when not done well. So I'll leave it at that. So to sum up today's podcast, this contraceptive discussion here, you know, there's nothing that's perfect. And if you're going to do an IUD, it should not be forced. You know, and your body is a very precious thing. And you want to have a good conversation with your care provider every single time to make sure your care provider is on the same page as you, because you don't want to be surprised in that moment. When you're in stirrups, when you're in that space, when you're vulnerable like that, and then they start doing the procedure without you understanding everything involved, I'm very much against that. I think you deserve that deep conversation and you deserve that connection with your doctor to trust them that they're going to respect your body. And when they do that procedure, it's all about you, not about them achieving the, you know what I mean? It's nothing should be forced. So I hope this is helpful. Please like, share, and subscribe. Your comments mean everything to Justin and I. We do go through them. Actually, we don't always go through emails. We don't. Well, Justin does. I don't always see the emails. I see more of the comments. I read more through the comments on the reels and the comments on YouTube. I really do go through those. But we do care about this. This is a labor of love on our part. So your comments helps us drive the content, helps us know how we can be of service. And thank you for all that feedback we've been getting. And we'll continue to work very hard at making this something that's useful for you. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.